Right, all right, all right. You know what time it is. 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And this is the No Chaser Show. I am the co-host, and I'm going to make this short and sweet so we can get right into the show. Like I said, I am the co-host, and now we're going to get to the real head of this show, the host of the show, Mac Williams of No Chaser. Hello there, Mac.
Hey, what's up, Jerry? Glad to have you here. Hey, guys, glad you should join me for another Friday, another show. Just want to let you know that No Chaser Show is sponsored by Trinity Web Solutions, trinitywebsolutions.org. That is where you can get online presence as far as websites, videos. You can also get links and domain names. trinitywebsolutions.org is your source for your online presence. So please go over there and check it out today. Look, guys, today we have a great show for you. We have a guest this Friday. We haven't had any for a few weeks. But starting this Friday, we got a very exciting guest. We're going to have more after this. But today we're going to have my friend, a good guy named Tim Lavin. He wrote a book called Walk On You, and we want to welcome Tim to the show. Tim, welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, we love having you, man. I mean, a friend of mine named Lonnie Southall actually introduced me to Tim over Facebook. That's really funny. I've never been introduced to somebody over Facebook before, but it was really interesting. But his story is really good. We're going to ask Tim some questions. Tim wrote a book, as I said, called Walk On You. It is about the real story, the real raw story of walk-on athletics in college football and in college sports, period. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask Tim. Tim, my first question, and I know Jerry will have some questions too, but I just want to explain to everybody, what does your book talk about, and just expound a little bit on what caused you to write it or what have you, and then we'll go from there.
Well, I was a walk-on at the University of Southern California, the USC Trojans, in 1988, and I had a very good high school career, and I just thought for sure I would be peppered with scholarship offers, and I was not. I went to a small school. I was second in rushing and scoring in Southern California in 1987, and the guy who was first was a fellow by the name of Russell White. And Russell White, you guys may know who that is. He played in the NFL.
I don't know who it is, but Jerry knows who it is.
Russell, yeah, and Russell Whitehead?
Yeah, I don't know
Russell,
who that is.
Russell White
is
the nephew of Charles White, who won the high school trophy at USC.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes. I get you now.
So Russell White was all world in Southern California. He was first in rushing and scoring. I was second in rushing and scoring. And then 3 through 10 on that top 10 list, everybody got scholarships except for me. What can I attribute that to? I don't know. It was 1987. I ran a 40 in 4.8. There weren't a lot of tailbacks running 4.8 40s in NCAA Division One. So that's probably number one. Number two is I went to a very small school called Chaminade College Prep in the West San Fernando Valley, which also was not known for their football at the time, so we did not have scouts coming and checking us out. I wasn't, that was kind of the predicament I was in. And I was just hoping, look, I know I'm not going to play tailback in college, but maybe they can move me to fullback and I can gain some weight. But no one took any interest in that. So I was forced to walk on and prove to the world that I could play at the Division I level, even though every single person I talked to said, you're not going to play. So I said, all right, I'll take that, put the feather in my cap, and let's go to work. So I lived in the weight room. I walked on at SC, and, on day one, I moved from tailback to fullback, and there were 7 other fullbacks there on scholarship in front of me.
Wow.
And it was right to the scout team, and the guys I had to go against were guys by the name of Junior Seau, Mark Carrier, Tim Ryan, all these guys who went on to have prolific NFL careers, we had the number one defense in the country in 1988 at USC,
right.
And I
right.
had the distinct privilege of playing against them in practice, of course. So, so my experience of being a walk-on was, you know, boy, get right after it, go against the best defense in the country, playing a new position at 190 pounds as a fullback.
Wow.
Work cut out for me, and I just, you know, plugged away and put on weight and worked out in the weight room, and I started to see the disparities of how walk-ons were treated versus scholarship guys. You know, the scholarship guys got all the pretty swag. They got the nice lockers. They got their first choice of anything and everything, and the walk-ons got pretty much everything that was left over, if anything was left over.
Okay. Give me some examples of what we, because we had a discussion and you were telling me, you know, the differences in the things that you're denied and don't get, as a walk-on. So, I mean, go ahead and continue. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I was just kind of like saying,
yeah.
like, you know,
so
there were
one
parts
of the first,
that were really talking.
Yeah, one of the first and major things, and this is my number one issue that I'm challenging the NCAA on, and I'm hoping to get worldwide support or national support, and thanks to shows like yours here today, hopefully we can rally the troops. And get a bunch of support going and force the NCAA to overturn this rule. That rule is training table. Right now, training table obviously is the meal, the nutritious meal that is given to student-athletes at the end of practice. After beating your body down on the practice field and beating your body down in the weight room, you need a nutritious meal to build your body back up. That's how we grow. That's how we move forward. And the scholarship guys are afforded that opportunity with beautiful meals after practice. The walk-ons, however, I realized I was on my own and was not allowed in that facility because I had the moniker of walk-on attached to my name.
Wow.
So wow. I had to beg other scholarship players to make doggy bags after they were done eating for a half hour, 45 minutes, and they would walk outside with two, three, or four doggy bags and hand them off to the walk-ons hiding behind the wall so the coaches wouldn't see us. And that's how the walk-ons ate. We had to get doggy bags like we were waiting in a soup kitchen line in order to eat decent meals. And if you were starving and didn't want to wait a half an hour or 45 minutes to get a doggy bag, then you were on your own and guys would go to, you know, the dollar menu at the fast food places, which is not what you want to put in your body, but it's pretty much all you can afford, you know,
absolutely.
If you're struggling on a shoestring budget.
Absolutely.
Wow.
So the NCAA rule states that walk-ons, well, when I was playing, walk-ons, you know, were not allowed to eat at training table, period, end of story. They amended that rule in 1996 and said, okay, we'll be nice. We'll let walk-ons eat at training table, but they have to pay for it. So they have to pay for it up front before the season starts. So they got to come up with another $700 or $800 out of their pocket to pay for that up front so they can go eat at training table after practice with their teammates who they're beating the crap of every single day, but they have to pay the coverage.
Well, Tim, can I ask you a question? Here's a question. I just want to ask this because this came up in my head when you were talking. Tim, why is it, and I just want to know your reason on it, because you would know. I mean, why is it that the NCAA would do that? Is it just mean people? Is it just I don't like people because they're walk-ons or they're no good? I don't hate them. Like, you don't even know these people, but I'm saying what is the logic? I mean, what do you think is the reason why you would do, why people would make up a stupid rule like that and then amend it and then say, okay, well, now pay for it? I mean, what is it? Is it that they don't like walk-ons or they're afraid of them? I mean, what is it? That's what I'm trying to get at.
The definition, their logic is they feel that is an added benefit. And God forbid a walk-on get any benefits. So a scholarship player is entitled to tuition, room and board, books, and a monthly stipend check, and the walk-ons are not, and of course, and with that stipend check, apparently the training table is deducted from that stipend check. Well, that's all well and good, but if a student athlete, scholarship player, gets a $1,300 a month stipend check to pay for his dorm or his apartment and any other miscellaneous stuff he wants to, he's getting a $1,300 stipend check regardless of how much the training table costs. If the training table meal is $10 or $25 or $50 a plate, that kid's still going to get a $1,300 stipend check. So the argument that they say, oh, you know, scholarship players, they're paying for it too because it comes out of their stipend check. Well, they would just the scholarship would just be more expensive if the meals were more expensive. They're not going to take that money out of the players budget. I mean, that's the check that they get. So that doesn't really hold water with me. And they walk on because if they went in and got training table, then they would technically be getting it for free while the scholarship players have it deducted from their stipend. So that, you know, that's not right. That can't happen.
Right.
So that's how the NCAA views it, that the scholarship guys pay for it because it goes through their stipend, but that doesn't hold water, and it's really a moot point because they get their 13. So let me ask you this. If the NCAA is going to make that argument, then I would say, okay, I'm a scholarship guy, and training table costs $700. Well, I tell you what, I don't want to eat a training table. Give me a $2,000 a month check. They're not going to accept that.
Right.
They're not going to accept that. Therefore,
right.
You don't really have a choice, you know?
Right.
So
this sounds like the same bogus crap that they give you about why they don't want to pay players. I don't want to go down that road, but I'm just saying, this is what they say. Well, they're getting a scholarship. They're getting this. It's like, yeah, but you're making all this money off these people. Like, you're selling all this merchandise and stuff off players, and you don't want to give them none because you hide behind the amateur rule. So to me, it seems like you're just being mean. Like, you're just saying, oh, well, it's coming out of their check. And it's like, but you're paying for it, though. Like,
right.
That doesn't make – you said your logic doesn't make sense. And I'm just sitting here like, I'm just stunned. Like, we're talking about food. We're not talking about giving somebody paying a player. We're talking about food. We're talking about the richest country in the world, and we're talking about people can't get simple food, fruits and vegetables, after a practice. Like, that's crazy.
I got a couple of questions here. First of all, I want to backtrack a little bit and ask Tim what prompted him to want to go to USC, and to three of them. I think I have three different questions. What prompted you to go to USC and to walk on to USC, and did you know this information about walk-ons, regardless of what college you wanted to go to, did you know this information about walk-ons before you decided to walk on at USC?
Good question. The reason I chose USC to walk on to is when the recruiting season had ended and everybody had signed after their national high school signing day and I didn't get any scholarship offers, USC had heard about me, and they looked at my tapes and they said, wow, you're a pretty good player. Maybe we'll have you come in as a preferred walk-on. And so they were able to take my transcripts and walk them through admissions and get me admitted into USC. Now, I still had to, you know, pay full pop, but I at least got admitted into USC. And,
right.
You know, my grades were decent. I was probably B-, C-plus type of student, but that's not good enough to get into USC. But
right,
the football program was able to get me into USC because of being a preferred walk-on.
Okay.
So that's why I chose USC, because they actually expressed interest in having me be a preferred walk-on, and they got me into the school. So that's the number one reason why I went to USC. When I went there, no, I did not know any of the rules about a walk-on. That's zero. They didn't tell me anything. So that was the stuff that I experienced, you know, firsthand as it was happening.
Okay. Now let me ask you this. What other things, and I didn't finish all of the book, but I know Training Table was one thing, but what are some of the other things that you would want to be changed as a walk-on, that things that people don't know about that may just, is that the only thing, or are there other things that...
No, there's three rules that need to be overturned. Training table is one, insurance is the other, and transferring is the third. Let's talk about insurance. Walk-ons have to pay for their own insurance. It is a travesty that an institution would allow a student athlete out onto their field and say, we love the fact that you're helping our program earn lots and lots of money, but provide your own insurance. I can't understand how I am dedicating my time and my body and my mind to this great game. And it's not a USC thing. This is a nationwide thing at every Division I school and Division II school. If I'm going to dedicate my body to your program and I'm good enough to be out there, then you should at least, you know, you're the one putting me through drill. You're the one telling me what to run. You're the one telling me where to go, what to do, when to do it, how to do it. And if I break my leg during that process, that's on your parents now. Tough luck.
Oh my gosh.
That's on your parents' insurance. I hope they can cover the deductible.
And this is health insurance.
This is your health insurance.
Okay.
And in addition, the schools actually ask parents to purchase additional participation insurance so they would fall under the school's umbrella, to cover the school. Which is fine. I admire that. I would want a kid covered under my umbrella, too, if I was running an institution. But I would be covering that kid's insurance. I mean, what are we talking about here? $4,000, $3,000 to cover a bunch of kids, to add them to the insurance policy that you're already paying hundreds of other athletes to be like insurance policy? I mean, we're talking pennies compared to the astronomical money that these institutions make.
Wow.
And that's why, when you think about it, you know, walk-ons are a victim of business, the business side of college, what they call amateur sports. And that is why you have every coach in the country making a very healthy six-figure salary. And it's on the backs of unpaid athletes. And especially walk-ons. You can't afford a $10 spaghetti dinner for me after practice with a little salad? Nope, you got to pay for that out of your own pocket.
That's terrible.
Isn't it?
Go ahead, Tim. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. So what was your question?
I was going to ask a quick question. I was going to ask you, now this insurance covers you in case of injury or, you know, you fall out, whatever, death, whatever, whatever. So you're telling me that a guy who has a full scholarship is automatically covered under it?
Yes.
Wow. That's terrible.
Yes.
What was the other rule you said that they had to change? What was the other one?
Transferring. Right now, if a player decides to transfer, we probably all know this, you're forced to sit out a year.
Yes.
You can practice, can't play. Why on God's green earth would a walk-on who isn't getting any funding from the school, no room, no board, no training table, no insurance, gets treated like crap, gets the worst equipment that's left over, and realizes, you know what, I'm eighth string. I am never going to play here, and these coaches are jerks. I'm going to go to Arizona State. Nope. Suddenly the NCAA cares about you, and they jump in and say, oh, you're transferring? You have to sit out of here.
Isn't that crazy?
I haven't played one damn play yet. And you have to disappear. So tell me how that makes sense.
That doesn't make sense to me. I mean, if you're not on the field, if you're not playing, you're just on practice squad, or you're just out there working out with the team and helping them make them better, it would behoove me to tell you, no, you can't go somewhere else. You're not. Basically, what you're telling me is you're not eligible to play anything. So even though a walk on or whatever, you still, you don't have a scholarship, you don't have anything. So to me, it's like a guy coming off the street, and I pay my money for the first year of USC. Let's say my mom and dad can pay for it, and I go to school there, and I go practice with the football team. I ain't on the real football team. I just go in the weight room, do whatever. I'm just practicing, doing whatever. And then I decide, you know what? I'm gonna leave and go to another school. Like, who could you tell that to?
Right.
You're basically, I just paid for the year. I'm not taking any money from you. That's just, like I said, that just doesn't. But again, Tim, I asked this. Is this a money thing, or is this just being mean? I don't get it. I could get it if you said, I'm doing this because it saves an extra $50 billion or, $10 million. But I don't see where you're saving any money doing this, or where the benefit is for the NCAA. I don't understand that. I just don't understand.
They don't. And of course, we're gonna as I continue my quest to knock down these walls and these barriers, I will find out more information. But information I have now is, if you allow walk-ons to transfer without sitting a year, then everyone else is going to complain that they want to transfer too and not have to sit out a year, and then they think they'll have a big mess on their hands if all these guys wanted to transfer every year.
All right, well, I got a couple questions here. All right,
okay,
you had mentioned earlier that you had a preferred walk-on. So my first question is this. Is there different levels of walk-on as a preferred walk-on versus whatever else there is type of walk-on? And how many walk-ons and what level of walk-ons are allowed for each college?
Great question. The first answer is yes. Yes and no to that question. There are differences between walk-ons. You have a preferred walk-on, which the university has been in contact with, thinks you're a good athlete, nobody offered you a scholarship, and they say, we would like to have you in our program. If your grades aren't good enough, let me see what I can do. Maybe I can walk you through, and they bring you into the program. If they are able to bring you into the program as a preferred walk-on, you are allowed to start practice in the beginning of August when the entire team reports for two-a-days at the beginning of August. If you are John Doe walk-on, who the university doesn't know anything about and is not labeled a preferred walk-on, he is not allowed to start practicing with the team until the first week of school starts. A Division I team can only start August with 105 players. On your average Division I team, you have 85 scholarship players, and then you could have 20 walk-on come in August. So you can bring in 105 guys to start practice in August. But if you want to carry more than 105 people, those other 5 or 10 or 15 more walk-ons would not be able to start practice until the first week of September when school starts.
Wow.
Those are typically your generic walk-ons versus your recruited walk-ons. However, once you're inside the system, you just become a victim of the system and you're all in the same boat. You're all in scout team. You all have to fend for yourself. You all have to pay for your insurance. You're all forced to sit out a year if you transfer. You're at the bottom of the depth chart, no questions asked. And it's very, very difficult to climb that ladder, that depth chart ladder.
Well,
wow.
you eventually got a scholarship. So give me the scenario that you went through starting as a preferred walk-on and the process that you took or the journey that you took in order to get to a scholarship-level player at USC.
Well, it was a year and a half journey of swinging the axe every single day, and taking a baseball bat to my coaches, basically saying, stop treating me as a full-time scout team lifer. I am not a scout team player for life. I am going to play on Saturday, and you are going to be forced to play me on Saturday. And so what I had to do was treat Tuesday and Wednesday's live practice and some Thursdays as it was my game day. And so my entire first two seasons, I literally went to practice Tuesday and Wednesday, and the Thursdays we went live, and I suited up with my armor ready for battle like it was Saturday at 1 o'clock. And
wow.
I got to fight after fight after fight with the toughest, baddest sons of guns in and all of Division I football with our USC defense led by Junior Seau. And I got into more fights with Junior Seau than anybody else in the history of my life. And that includes my two brothers. And I think Junior also got into more, you know, all of his fights probably were more with me than anybody else. And the reason I say that is we brawled every day 3, 4, 5 times. And, you know, the brawls are, you know, you guys play football. I mean, you know, you get into a brawl, there's a bunch of punches thrown over a 5 to 10 second period, and then you get broken up. But, you know, it's not a long fight, and you're not really hurting each other, per se, if you have all that equipment on. But, but there's still a lot of slugging going on and slamming each other to the ground, and, you know, it's kind of a WWE type thing. And, you know, it takes several players to pry you apart, and then you go out and run another play. And then he gets pissed off that I knocked him out of the way, and he didn't make the tackle, and he smacks me in the head. And I don't like that. I know he's the greatest linebacker in the country, but I don't like when you smack me in my head. So, boom, I smack him back, and then the fight is on. So I probably gotten over 100 fights with him easily. And I think that, you know, he probably fought with me more than anybody else, because even over a 20-year NFL career, in the NFL, they don't go live. And so everything is hit, thud, stand up, one step, stop, and walk through and run through. But in the NFL, the collective bargaining agreement, the CBA, does not allow, though, to go live, but one practice a week. And they're only allowed to go one practice a week, and when they do go live, it's one step, thud, and stop. So there's not a whole lot of brawling going on in practice. There is some scuffles going on in the NFL during, you know, two-a-days, you know, when guys are trying to make the team, right? But once they have their 53-man roster, everyone's got a spot on the team. You can breathe a sigh of relief, and let's just go out and hit each other a little bit. You know, one quick step, thud, boom, we're done. Huddle up again, and that's an NFL practice. So there's not a whole lot of brawling going on. So I got into more fights with Junior Seau, and he probably got in more fights with me over the course of his entire career. So that type of attitude that I brought to practice every day really forced the coaches to say, okay, Tim's not your typical walk-on scout team guy. This guy can actually play. So when I would do drills with the other fullbacks who were scholarship guys who were in front of me, and I'm making better blocks, and I'm catching the ball, and I'm running the ball better, you know, finally it was like my other teammates telling the coaches, hey, coach, this guy's for real, you know. He's not a scout teamer. You know, he's better than this guy and this guy and this guy. Why is he 8th string on the depth chart? So thankfully, it was actually injuries that occurred to the scholarship guys in front of me that I, you know, perhaps to my coach's reluctancy, they were forced to move me up the depth chart ladder. And finally, when I got to, you know, a position where they were forced to play me in games, suddenly I'm grading out, you know, 90%, 95%, 100%. And, you know, every play is graded, you know, just like in school, A, B, C, D, F, and up to 100%. And every single play you're graded on. And I graded out, you know, meaning every assignment was right, every block was right, you know, everything I did was spot on. I was able to get very, very high grades, and the coach literally looked on, just on paper, could not justify putting me back on scout team. You know, he's like, shit, I got to play this guy, you know. So that's how I ultimately earned my scholarship and playing on Saturdays.
Wow. My other question, Mac dropped off, but he'll be back. Along with you as a walk-on, how many other walk-ons were actually able to get back get a scholarship within the same time frame that you were at USC? Did this happen often, or was this a rarity?
No, it was a rarity. I was the only one who earned a scholarship from my group, from my year of 88, walk-on in an 88. There were two other guys who got scholarships who were walk-ons who were older than me, but they put in 2.5 years to get their scholarship. I got mine after actually, they put in 3 years. I got mine officially after my second season, my second
right.
full year of school.
Right.
So I was a walk-on for 2 years and a scholarship player for 2 years. But yeah, I mean, I did earn it pretty quickly. It doesn't happen much. You might get just one or two walk-ons a year getting a scholarship, and typically they've been in the program for 3 or 4 years in order to earn that. So I was fortunate that I could do it relatively quickly.
So after you were a walk-on and you got your scholarship, and quite naturally you see the other walk-ons going through the same thing that you had to go through before you got your scholarship, and you had that experience behind you, but still in the back of your mind, did you try to do anything to help the walk-ons, or they were basically on their own, or tell us about what you did after you gained a scholarship?
Well, I took care of my walk-on brothers, I'll tell you that. Now that I could mm-hmm. go to training table officially without hiding, I would make my own set of doggy bags. And I, like Santa Claus, would get the big Glad bags, you know, the Glad trash bags, and just
sure.
make tons of food and bring it out to the soup kitchen line outside.
Wow.
Wow.
I took care of them with regard to food, and then just from an emotional standpoint, you know, the guys that are really struggling, thinking about quitting, really frustrated with what's going on, who were, totally wanted to leave the program, and I would sit down with them and have long chats and find out if this is what they really wanted to do, and if that was something that they could stay with the program, and I just tried to encourage them and give them, as much motivation as I could so they could be part of the program and hopefully encourage them. And most of them, some guys bailed out. Some guys just said, man, that's not for me. I'd rather join a fraternity and learn how to bounce a quarter into a cup. And other guys... And other guys said, no, you know what, man, this sucks, but I'm going to stick it out. I'm going to fight tooth and nail. And, you know, most of those guys go 4 or 5 years, and they never see a down. And, not even a Rudy play at the end of their fifth year. So that's tough. So I just try to be emotional supporters.
Now, let me ask you this, Tim. When did you actually write the book? I mean, I know you went and played and graduated. Did you have other NFL guys who saw what you went through, whatever? Did you have their support once you got out of school and you started to do this? Like right now, what you're doing with Walk On You? Do you have any NFL players or anybody now who supports you or trying to support you or sees what you're doing or, you know, is behind you in any way at all?
Hello? Tim?
Hello? Tim?
Tim?
Oh,
Tim, are you there? I still see him on here.
Oh,
yeah,
okay. There we go.
Okay, hey. Live. So I knew you blanked out somewhere. I was like, did you hear my question?
About people supporting me?
Yeah. Yes.
Are there any NFL guys who know about this who have seen what you're doing or whatever and have joined
the club? Yeah. In fact, everybody I've spoken to
100% supporting this whole process. I'm not doing, I mean, I'm doing it alone because, you know, that's what walk-ons do. You got to do everything by yourself. But no, the guys that I spoke to are, like, they love what I'm doing. They love where it's going. They, I got guys like Carl Mecklenburg. You guys remember him from the 70s and the
80s? Oh, absolutely.
Carl Mecklenburg. He
absolutely.
He was a linebacker, number 77 for the Denver Broncos. He was a walk-on
absolutely.
In Minnesota.
Yep.
Yeah.
He got treated pretty harshly, and I interviewed him for the book, and he's like, I am so glad that you're doing this. I'm so fired up. This is great. You know, I'll support you 100%. Dabo Sweeney, the head coach at Clemson right now, he was a walk-on at Alabama. I called him up, and he goes, Tim, I am so happy you're doing this. I cannot believe it's never even been done before. And so that's why I put his quote on the back of my book. Terry Donahue was a UCLA coach for 20 years. He was a walk-on at UCLA, you know, and he totally participated in doing the book with a big, great big interview for me, and he's 100% in. And then the great coach Tom Osborne, which you guys know from Nebraska for 25
yep.
years.
Absolutely.
Tom Osborne is, you know, the architect of the great walk-on program that Nebraska had. And he is so beautiful. He's a beautiful guy because he knows that walk-ons get a raw deal. And for me to say, I want to write a book, I want to stand up for the walk-ons, and I'm shooting for change. And he said, you know, I want to be part of it. I want to help you.
Wow.
And it was beautiful. It was beautiful because the PAC, the big – Nebraska's in what, the big 10 right now, or the big 12, one of the two? Well,
big 12.
two years ago, they moved, the big
right.
12. They moved from one conference to the other. And
okay.
I called Tom Osborne's office 1 week before they made that announcement on ESPN. And nobody in the country knew they were going to jump conferences. And I called his office, and he was the athletic director at Nebraska at the time, 2 years ago. And his assistant, his secretary, said, he's really busy right now. He does not have time for interviews. And I said, and of course, I have no idea. He's about to make this huge thing, so I don't know, you know, why he is busy other than just being an athletic director. And I said, well, could I just send you a query letter of my book, a one-page letter, you know, kind of detailing the book a little bit, outlining it, and you give it to him. And if he throws it in the trash can, he throws it in the trash can. And she said, okay, go ahead and send it to me, but I guarantee you we're not going to be calling you back. I'm like, no problem. So I send it to her. The very next morning at 8:30 in the morning, I had an email from Tom Osborne.
Wow.
And said, Tim, I want to help you with this book. I will participate any way you want. If you want to call me or answer me questions over email or do it over the phone. And I wrote back. I said, let's do it over the phone. And he writes back and he said, we'll call you at 2:30 that day. So at 2:30, I'm walking on pins and needles, you know. It was 2:30 my time. And I'm walking on pins and needles and waiting for that phone call to ring from the greatest coach of all time, or one of them, right? And,
right.
And his secretary called me. And she said, are you ready to talk to Coach Osborne? And I said, yes, of course. And she said, okay, he's super busy, so this is only going to be maybe a five-minute phone call. I'm like, okay, no problem. I got my questions ready to go. I'm ready to go. Let's go. And he puts me on the phone, and 45 minutes later, we were getting off the phone.
Get out of here. Wow.
So
wow.
That tells you how important walk-ons are to Coach Osborne. And when you find a coach like him or Dabo Sweeney who find great value in walk-ons and they actually utilize them positively rather than treating them like tackling dummies and blocking bags, you're going
right.
to get great things out of them. So
right.
what Tom Osborne told me, he said the secret, and this is the big one part, this is a big part of the interview here, and this is in the book too, the secret to having a great program is having a great walk-on program. And if you have a great, and how to make a great walk-on program is you don't discard all 25 of your scholarships to high school kids every year. Give out 20 or 21 and hold back 3, 4, 5 scholarships and you dangle them like carrots in front of those walk-ons, and you say the best four or five guys are going to get this scholarship, especially if you work your way into the number one or number two on the depth chart. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the fight is on, and those guys bust their tail like no one's business. And those scholarship guys know now that their starting position is no longer guaranteed, that they could possibly lose that position. Even if they were second team, they would lose that second team spot to a walk-on who's working harder than them. So the scholarship guy doesn't want to lose that spot, so he worked harder. Well, if the walk-on's working harder and the scholarship guy's working harder, everybody's getting better Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Pretty soon you have a recipe for success, and that's why Nebraska's so fantastic for three decades.
Wow.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. I never thought of it like – but one of the things I do want to point out, and I think this is important, because I'm a basketball coach and trainer, and one of the things that you just brought up something I want to kind of connect with, is that one of the things that I know Michael Jordan said is he said that I practice just like I play. I practice just as – I took practice as serious as playing. And one of the things that I think that got me, what you said, was that the way you earned it was through hard work, but what you did was you took your practice, your live, as if it were game day. And
right.
I think that's important for young athletes to know who listen to this, is that there's a price to pay. See, people just probably saw Tim Lavin on Saturdays and said, oh, man, he's great. But they see the results, but they don't realize all what you went through. So I just want to point out that that's a very important thing that I want to point out, is that, Tim, the reason why you made it to getting a scholarship is because you practiced like you play. So that's why you graded out so high, because you were already playing on Saturday.
That's right.
So when you got into the real situation, you didn't know no different.
Right.
I run this just like I run it any other time. I knocked the mess out of it, except the other guy wasn't Junior Seau. You said, I'm just knocking this guy down and doing. So I think that's an important thing that came out of this, too, and I think that all athletes need to understand what you did. And what you did was you just busted your tail to get it, and you forced them to have to do it. And I think in this day and age, a lot of athletes are lazy. They're recruited hard, they're given everything, and they get lazy. Instead of realizing how fortunate they are, and that you need to work hard to stay there, you can't just rest on your laurels and sit there. So I just wanted to kind of bring that point out, is that it was funny because when you were sitting here saying, I was like, shoot, you ain't got to tell me you're grading out at 90, Tim. I'm like, shoot, you knocking the slobber knocker out of your teammates on Saturday, on Tuesdays. I'm like, why wouldn't you? You don't know no better. When you go out there, you're doing the same thing. And I just think that's a lot of things that I think some coaches miss, that they don't realize that practice should be the same thing as game. And I think that's a lot of the reason why, and I don't mean to get off the subject, but I think that's a lot of the reason why a lot of these teams in the NFL or even in college lose sometimes. It's not that they're not prepared. It's just you didn't do anything all week. You just touched and walked through and did everything else, and you get out there and you get around guys who really busted their tails all week, and you get hammered. So, you know, I just wanted to say, you know, I really appreciate you bringing it to the forefront. So one of my last questions is, I want to ask you, so has anybody from the NCAA talked to you, or have you had a chance to talk to them or write a letter, or has anything been said as far as, you know, the quiet seats up in the high up top of the building?
I have called them, and I have spoken to their rules. The people who interpret their rules. And I've tried to inquire about why rules are the way they are, and they don't really have an answer for me. Additionally, I mean, they can tell me what the rule is, and they'll do their best to interpret the rule, but they can't tell me that, you know, I can go change a rule. I can't change a rule because only the NCAA is comprised of member institutions. It's like being part of a country club, right? The club is run by the members.
Right.
And however, the people at the very, very top in the executive office are the people in the NCAA executive office at Indianapolis. And they really pull the strings. But for rules to change, they need to be introduced by a member institution, not by Tim Lavin in Southern California. So, if I send them a letter, they'll put that in the trash can. It won't go very far. But if a university gets on the bandwagon here and wants to be the premier university, the leader, they will petition and send in a policy change to the NCAA, and then their internal committee will have to take it up in their boards, in their Senate meetings that they have internally, and then they all vote on it. The problem is that this thing with training table has been committed about 5 times since my playing days, and it's been shot down all 5 times, saying nope, training table is an added benefit. And like I said, in 1996, they thought that they were doing us all a favor by saying, oh, we're really sorry that you guys couldn't eat with the team. It would be nice for you guys to sit and enjoy the camaraderie. Oh, but don't forget to pay at the door. They made one step forward in saying, okay, walk-ons can actually come in and eat next to their teammates. But the next step is to realize, hey, you know what? Every athlete, male or female, I don't care if you're on the lacrosse team or the football team or the golf team, if they're serving training table, they're serving training table for a reason. That means that they need to nourish their body. And if they're nourishing athletes' bodies, student-athletes, then all student-athletes. None of this back-of-the-bus stuff, you know, you guys get to eat, you guys don't. Are we on a team together or not? If we're all part of the same team, then we all should practice, the same hours. We work out in the same weight room. We watch the same amount of film. We spend the same amount of hours in meetings. Can I not eat with my brothers after practice, after 3 hours of battle, to nourish my body, to build myself back up so I get stronger, so I can go back after practice and make the scholarship guy better?
Wow.
That's what this is all about. It's the absolute segregation, and it's just segregation in a different way than what we're used to thinking about.
I got to ask this question because I meant to ask a lot earlier into the interview.
Go ahead.
Where did you get your name Mad Dog from?
I had earned my way into special teams, and I was on kickoff. I was on all 4 special teams, and I had was on kickoff. We were playing Washington, University of Washington, at the Coliseum, and I ran down the field, and the kickoff return team, Washington, the guy set up to block me, and I got lower than he did because low pads win. And I dropped him back on his backside and kept running down the field and made the tackle. And so when we were watching film on Monday, or maybe it was Sunday, whatever it was, the whole team's in there, and it was pretty cool because the whole team's in there, and the lights are off, and the camera's rolling on the big screen, and we've got this 15-foot by 15-foot screen, and we're watching our special team, and the coach, the special teams coach, Bobby April, who's been a special teams coach in the NFL for 2 decades now. He puts the red laser dot on me, and he goes, "Everybody watch Lavin." And everyone's watching me, and I run down, bam, I flat back the guy, and the whole team goes back, right? And everyone's jumping up and down and jumping on me and, the whole 9 yards. And Coach April goes, "Way to go, Mad Dog." And everyone started cracking up. So I go out to practice that afternoon after we're done with film, and everyone was calling, "Hey, Mad Dog, hey, Mad Dog." And it never left me.
Wow.
That's a heck of a story. Now that's earning a nickname right there. That's earning a nickname. Yeah. The last thing I wanted to ask you, one thing I want you to do real quick, I want you to tell our listeners, because it's 7:49. I want you to tell our listeners where they can pick. They can pick up the book at any bookstore. Is that pretty much correct, or is it certain bookstores?
Electronically, you can get it electronically if you like to read e-books on Amazon, which has the Kindle. or Barnes & Noble has the Nook. If you want to upload it and or download it onto your thing, go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and you can get the ebook version. If you want the paperback version that I have, then you should go to my website, walkonu.com, W-A-L-K-O-N-U.com, and you can order it right there on the website. And obviously we're getting chase the season, so now would be a great time to order it for anybody who either A, loves college sports in your family, or B, is a participant right now in high school sports, and they're even considering playing sports in college. This is a book they should read, because if they don't get a scholarship, I want them to know what the walk on life is all about. And if they understand what being a walk on is all about, they will be mentally prepared when those things start to happen, rather than having it happen to them like right for the moment, right then and there. They'll be like, oh gosh, you know, they warned me this was going to happen. So, you know, it'll be really mentally prepared. And some kids will read this book and say, you know what, that's too much of a burden for me to bear. I'm going to join a fraternity. Forget it. And other people are going to say, you know what, that's an incredible opportunity. I want to take this challenge on. I know I'm going to put it at the bottom of the barrel, but damn it, I'm going to fight my way to the top. And that's what those guys are going to learn by reading that book.
Great. We can reach you on Facebook at Tim Lavin on Facebook, and what about your Twitter?
The Twitter is at WalkOnU, and the Facebook is also, I also have a Facebook page, at WalkOn, the Facebook page is WalkOnU, just WalkOnU, but actually it might be Walk-OnU, it's Walk-OnSpaceU, and that's my Facebook.
Okay. And like I said, I want everybody to go out. I just want to say this before we get off. I want all of our listeners, if you're listening to this, whether it's a replay, live, whatever, I want you guys to go out and get this book. This book is a very good book. I've read through a bit of it, but not even half yet. And I'm telling you, it's a page turner. It will tell you a lot. You'll learn a lot. If you have any kids or kids aspiring to be anything and go, you know, NCAA Division I, go anywhere, you want them to read this book. I recommend his book highly. Tim is doing a great thing. Many people ain't doing it. Brave guy to take on the establishment. But you know what? It always takes, you know, David beat Goliath. And I really believe that at some point Tim's book and Tim's story is going to spark somebody with some power somewhere along the way, somebody with tremendous power who has the power to make a change or make a bigger ripple than he's making. So I would tell anybody out there, if you want to help with the cause, I mean, contact him. If you want to get, I mean, I get everybody get the book this for Christmas, New Year's, birthdays, whatever's coming up, get a hold of this book. I strongly recommend it to each and every one of my listeners. And Tim is a great guy, brave guy to come out and talk about this. And God bless him. He's all by himself. But if I have anything to do with it, I'm going to try to find a way to join and help out. And I'm going to spread the word about Walk On You, which I have been. And I'm especially because I'm around a lot of high school kids and stuff like that. High school, you know, I substitute. Actually, Tim, you don't know this, but I substitute actually in the high school here in Charles County, in Washington, D.C., in Charles County, Maryland. So I see these kids every day who are playing on the football team, on the track team, whatever, and I'm definitely starting to spread the word with those kids and say, hey, man, get this book. So I'm definitely going to pass it on to those guys as I talk to them in class or whatever and try to pass it on so they'll be prepared. But, Tim, I really admire what you're doing. It's 7:54. I do have one more question for you, Tim, and I'm interested because I think you could give me a really good answer because you're in it. This is going to be our last question, whatever, but Tim, do you think, I want to know why, because I don't think you can answer this question, do you think that college athletes should be paid? Yes or no?
That is, you know what, that's a really tough question. I absolutely see the pros and cons both sides. If you put a gun to my head and force me to answer right this very second, I would lean towards yes, giving them something, ultimately yes, but there has to be some parameters so it doesn't get you know, to control and saturate it and, you know, become, you know, something really screwed up. But yes, I do believe athletes should technically get something more than they get now because, you know, they're bringing the billions, not millions, they're bringing the billions to the table. They should be getting something. And let's not kid ourselves. Those institutions are not there for those guys to get an education. They want them that, that makes them look good, but that's not why they're there. They're there to perform on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I agree with your point. I always said I don't believe they should be paid, like, of course, you know, millions of dollars, but I think the kids should get something because I just find it hard to believe that there are some athletes that aren't getting any buy a slice of pizza. I just think that's terrible. Again, we're talking about food. Food. So.
Yeah.
Tim, I appreciate you being on the show with us today.
Yes.
Jerry, I know me and Jerry appreciate it. Hey, Tim, you know, whatever
absolutely.
You do in the future, if you ever, as long as I have this show, if you ever want to come back on here and talk about anything else, you decide to write another book, you decide to give it an update, something you want to get out to the public, you are welcome anytime, my friend. Text me. You know how to text me. You know how to hit me on Facebook, whatever. I'm here to help, man, whatever I can do to help you guys because this is a real issue, man. And I really respect what you're doing, man. I have tremendous respect for it because I know that I couldn't do it, but I know you were cut out and made to do it, and I respect that. I really do, Jake. I really do, and I respect you.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you guys having me on so much, and I really appreciate everything that you've done, and I want to give a shout-out to our mutual friend Lonnie because I wouldn't be on this show if it wasn't for Lonnie. So a big thank you to him, and thank you to you guys for having me on.
Yeah, and anytime you want to come back, man, you want to talk about anything, you want to talk about college. Hey, look, we always looking for insiders, college insiders. You want to call and do predictions, or you're always welcome, man. Anytime, you know, we may call you up and say, hey, man, can you come do a show, man? We want to, you know, college football starting this Saturday. Who you think or whatever, you know, we reach back in to get our guests sometimes to ask different things or put them on for different subjects. So, like I said, man, but anything dealing with this, you need, man. Please don't hesitate to contact us, man. I control the show. You know, I run this, and if you ever want to come back on and voice your opinion, voice something about something, you're welcome here anytime, man. Your family.
Right on. I love it. Thank you so much, you guys. I really appreciate it.
All right, man. Enjoy your weekend, and we will see you later. Jerry, go ahead and disconnect, and we'll finish out the show.
Okay.
Right on. Thanks,
all right, man. All right, Tim, take care. Have a good night.
All right.
Thank you.
Merry
you too.
Christmas. You and your family.
Merry Christmas.
Same to you. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Hey, we got about exactly 2 minutes left in the show, Mac.
No problem.
Some of these names, and I can't believe some of these names. I didn't know it from a fact. Clay Matthews, J.J. Watt, Jordy Nelson, Carl Mecklenburg, which I don't know if you remember him. I definitely remember him. Gary Brackett, Thomas Howard, and these coaches, Lou Holtz, Terry Donahue, Dabo Sweeney, Kevin Sumlin, and Jim Mora.
I didn't know.
Wow. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, isn't it? Hey, all were walk-ons. And you see,
right.
You would sit there, and when you hear those names, you would think, like, oh, yeah, they went straight through. They got scholarship. And you're like, no, they didn't. They had to earn it. So, you know, that's – and look at the careers they've had. So I'm sitting there like,
exactly.
Wow. Are you serious?
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is one of our – you know, I have to go – I have to really say, this is I have to pat myself on the back, man. We got a good guest this week, and I think it's something that nobody else is touching. You know, he's on news all the time. I see him all the time posting. You know, he's on the local news and things like that for his book. But, you know, we got him on here, and we got him to talk about something that, you know, I just really think is very important. It's an issue. And I learned something today. I learned something when he sent me the book. I was just sitting there like, man, I can't believe – you know, not only the walk-ons, but just how they're treated. I'm just like, the NCAA, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. They are tripped. They're some funny guys,
man.
I just don't understand where they come up with, you know, I don't understand where you come up with rules and you can't connect the dots. If you're going to make a rule, then you should be able to tell me from A to B why. But if you can't tell me why, then you need to change it because that just doesn't make sense, you know?
Yep, you're exactly right.
You know, but Tim... you know, Tim put it out there and said it really well. And, you know, I think the biggest thing I learned from this whole thing is that if you really want something bad enough, you got to go out and kill yourself for it sometimes. Sometimes you just got to do hard, unadulterated work to get it. And the thing I think that came out, that stood out for me, is that he took practice as a game. And that's just nuts.
Yeah.
You know?
To tell you the truth, Mac, I'm not a book reader, but this book that he wrote, I'm really interested in reading this book, Walk on You. It's like I've never heard this. I can't believe that some of the things that he described are actually happened to him back in his day, and probably is still happening. So because quite naturally it's happening because the rules haven't changed. I really am glad that you got this guy on here because it's been an eye-opening experience. And I think I lost Mac. Yes, I did. And with that being said, I know we can't come back because we're on overtime. So tune in next week, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where Mac and I will be back here again with the Note Chaser. I am JT. I am the co-host, and we are gone.